Hello everyone, and welcome back to Murder, Mother and Me, where each week we will dive into some of the most infamous murders, mysteries, and everything in between.
So if, like us, you are intrigued by all things true crime, you're in the right place.
I'm your host, Josh.
And I'm your other host, Patty. I'm the mother.
And I'm the me. Thank you, as always, for all of the support on our podcast so far.
Tell all your friends, and please leave us a review, but only if it's a good one.
Today we are drinking coffee, as always, from our favourite Derek's on Allerton Road.
Derek the dog.
Derek the dog, yeah.
I think you need to put a picture up of Derek the dog. The one that I was trying to imagine what kind of dog Derek would be, and he was a Staffordshire Bull Terrier.
Yeah, whereas I see more of a Jack Russell. And we're actually eating a Lotus Biscoff chocolate cookie, which is from the Holly's Farm Shop, which is unbelievable, but now I feel like I want to be sick.
If you don't want to be 26 stone, don't go to the Holly's Farm Shop, because the cakes and everything else are just out of this world.
Okay, so this brings us to our season finale of season one, which will be a two-part Christmas special.
And as it happens, the case we are talking about today happened on Christmas Day, so we thought this would be a good way to wrap up the end of year episode.
If you have been listening from episode one, we hope you've enjoyed season one of Murder, Mother and Me, and thank you for sticking with us this far.
There's been some memorable moments along the way, especially some of the names we've tried to pronounce and failed miserably.
So this particular case happened in 1996, and here are a few interesting facts about that year.
The average price of a house in England was £53,331.
It's not very expensive, is it?
Well, not by today's prices, no, but if only we knew that then in 1996, could have bought about four of them, couldn't we, and been quids in, though?
But I wonder what kind of house you would have got for £53,000 at that point. Like, are you talking like a one-bedroom flat, or are you talking a house?
I'm guessing it's based on the average, so maybe a sort of three-bedroomed, semi-detached house or something like that, maybe.
I mean, it's not bad for £53,000, that, is it?
Well, not now, it isn't, no. Now you just get a phone box. If you were in London, you'd just get, like, what? One room with a kitchen in?
No, you get a downstairs toilet.
The Spice Girls released their debut single, Wannabe, and was the biggest selling single of the year.
How does that song go, Mum?
Tell me what you want, what you really, really want. Do you actually want me to sing?
Yeah, I do.
Can I be Scary Spice then? You can be Baby Spice.
No, I always wanted to be Sporty Spice, to be fair. I actually remember, I don't know if you remember this, but you bought me a karaoke machine when I was a little boy. So I don't know how old.
I think we bought you all a karaoke machine.
Well, how old would I have been in 1996? So I was five. So I was probably 5, 6 or 7, and I used to sit
Hang
in my
on a
room.
Minute, you were probably 5, 6 or 7 in 1995.
No, I don't mean that. I mean, when you bought me this karaoke thing, I would have been around that age. And I remember dancing in my room with the microphone, singing along to that song by the Spice Girls. I used to be obsessed with them.
Yeah, like everybody else at the time. A halibut weighing...
Why are you saying halibut?
Why'd you say it?
Halibut.
Okay, ready? A halibut weighing 459 pounds was caught in Dutch Harbour, Alaska.
450? Do you know how heavy that is?
No.
Well, I weigh 173 pounds, so it's pretty much three of me.
But did they put him back in the water? Or see, the mayor just assumed he was a male because he's, like, big.
Well, halibut is quite a high-end fish, I think, to eat in restaurants, so I would assume that, unfortunately, he is no longer.
I know, but if he's 459 pounds, he must have lived quite a long time to gain all that weight, so... You know, couldn't they have just left him in peace or put him back in? It must have been, like, just in the middle of the water with a bit of water around it, like an island. I bet his name was Harry.
Harry Halibut?
Yeah.
Okay, everyone, let's get on with our two-part Christmas special. This is the tragic case of JonBenet Ramsey. On Christmas night, 1996, 6-year-old JonBenet Ramsey was reported missing from a Boulder, Colorado home, only to be found dead hours later. Was it a tragic accident, or is there something more sinister at play? In this two-part episode, we'll dive into the mysteries, the unanswered questions, and the dark secrets surrounding one of the most puzzling cases in true crime history. But before we go any further, let's go right back to the beginning. Boulder, Colorado is a serene college town nestled at the foot of the Rocky Mountains. It's known for its picturesque snow-covered landscapes, its thriving tech industry, and back in the mid-1990s for its reputation as one of America's safest places to live. The Ramsey family lived in a 15-room Tudor-style mansion on 15th Street. John Ramsey was a successful businessman, the president and CEO of Access Graphics, a computer software company. Patsy Ramsey, John's second wife, was a former Miss West Virginia and a devoted mother to their two children. Burke was 9 years old and JonBenet was 6 years old. JonBenet was a star in her own right though. A child beauty queen, she had participated in pageants across Colorado, winning titles like Little Miss Colorado and America's Royal Miss. She was known for her bright smile, blonde curls, and sparkly costumes. To the outside world, the Ramseys seemed to have it all.
Well, they were a very affluent family, weren't they, obviously?
Well, if you're living in a 15-room house, you're very well off, aren't you?
A 15-room mansion, not just a house.
Yeah.
And these kids seem to be really well taken care of, don't they? As it said, Patsy Ramsey, the mother, was a former beauty queen, and she encouraged her daughter, JonBenet, to go along similar lines as a hobby. And she participated in lots of them, didn't she?
Yeah, and I think JonBenet was quite successful in the, you know, the beauty pageant circuit, even though she was only so young.
Yeah, she was extremely successful. And this is a big question in this case. Was this a significant factor in what happened to JonBenet? You know, beauty pageants with children really, you know, acting as adults, dressing up with makeup on. And
well, it's like over-sexualising kids, really, isn't it?
Yeah, I think when you see those kind of competitions, although it may be meant perfectly innocently to somebody watching it with not the right mindset, it could come across like that.
Christmas Day 1996 was reportedly uneventful for the Ramseys. They had spent the morning exchanging gifts and enjoying a holiday meal. That evening, they attended the Christmas party at the home of close friends Fleet and Priscilla White. Why do Americans always have, like, really extravagant names? Fleet White.
But wait, Priscilla White, isn't that Cilla Black?
I think of...
No, you know Cilla Black from Liverpool?
That's is she called Priscilla White?
Her real name's Priscilla White.
What, but her stage name's Cilla Black?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
I don't think it's the same one we're talking about here.
Well, I'm sure it's not. But, like...
Surprise, surprise.
But why do they always have really, like, over-the-top names, like Fleet and, like, Hunter?
I like those names. I've always been an American sort of...
And, like, Brock.
Yeah, but I was, like, Ross, didn't I? And that was before it was popular.
I don't
here.
Really think that's a very American name, no.
It was.
Fleet.
Oh, Fleet.
Well, I've never heard Fleet in my life.
I think they're kind of more like surname kind of names, but I think a lot of these names are family names, so they're passed down. You know, and it may be, like, the wife's sort of surname before she gets married, and then they incorporate it into the kids' names.
Yeah, didn't you mention something about JonBenet's name potentially coming from her dad's name?
I think if I'm right, it came from her father's name. I think it was sort of like John Bennett or something. Maybe they were his
and they've
first
joined
two
it
names.
Together to make JonBenet.
JonBenet. I actually really like that name. And yes. Her middle name was the same as her mum's name, JonBenet Patricia Ramsey.
By all accounts, it was a happy evening. The Ramseys left the White's home around 9:30 p.m. JonBenet, who had fallen asleep in the car, was carried upstairs to bed by her dad, John. Patsy said she got JonBenet ready for bed before heading to sleep herself. The house, by all appearances, was peaceful that night. But by the early hours of the next morning, the whole world had unravelled.
And this was Christmas night then, wasn't it?
Yeah, so this was the night of December 25th. At 5:52 a.m. on December 26th, Patsy Ramsey called 911. She was frantic, reporting that her daughter was missing and that she had found a ransom note on the staircase. The ransom note is one of the most confounding pieces of evidence in this case. At 3 pages long, it was unusually lengthy for a ransom note. Written on a notepad from the Ramsey home, with a pen that also belonged to the family, the note demanded $118,000 for JonBenet's safe return, a number that matched the amount of John's recent Christmas bonus.
That's strange in itself. I mean, come on, if you're going to go in and kidnap a child, would you not have that prepared beforehand? Or you'd just scribble a quick note out, wouldn't you? You're not going to write a 3-page note, surely.
Well, that's not a ransom note, is it? That's a bloody novel.
Yeah, it's kind of like the War and Peace of ransom notes, isn't it? And to know that John's recent Christmas bonus was $118,000.
Yeah, it matches perfectly, I said. And also, I find it a bit strange that you'd think, like you said, that they would have prepared the ransom note beforehand. But the fact that they've broken into someone's house, whoever this may be, they've sat and wrote out a 3-page note.
And not even brought any paper of their own. Used, you know, they must have looked around for some paper and a pen. That
yeah, that's
strange.
What I'm saying. And that's how you know that they wrote it in the house, because it was on a notepad of the Ramseys used with a pen that the Ramseys owned. So I just find that so strange.
I think when she found the note, you know, this is a big mansion we're talking about, and JonBenet's bedroom was a good way away from the parents' bedroom, and she came down like a spiral staircase, and the note was left on the spiral staircase. I mean, I've heard that 911 call, and she does really sound frantic, honestly. I don't know how you could actually make yourself sound that panic-stricken if it wasn't real.
Yeah, there's usually like a bit of a tell, isn't it, when people are putting it on. The ransom note began with this bizarre introduction. "We are a group of individuals that represent a small foreign faction. We respect your business, but not the country it serves." It then went on to detail instructions for delivering the ransom money and warned against contacting police, though Patsy immediately made the 911 call. The tone of the letter is dramatic, almost theatrical, and experts later suggested it mimicked lines from movies like Speed and Dirty Harry. But its most damning aspect, it was written using items from inside the home, meaning the so-called kidnappers would have had to sit down and compose a 3-page letter after supposedly abducting JonBenet. I think that's the most bizarre part to me. I mean, they've broken in, they've got this notepad. To write 3 pages is going to take a significant amount of time, isn't it? No matter how fast you can write.
And don't forget, they'd be writing under pressure because, obviously, what they're saying is they've kidnapped this child. The family are all still in the house asleep. How on earth could you sit down as a kidnapper and have that level of cool to sit down and write a ransom note like that, 3 pages long?
Well, I think also this kind of says to me that there's more than one person involved.
Well, that's what that note suggests.
Well, it says a group, doesn't it? Yeah.
That's the way they're trying to make it sound.
But it would have to be more than one, wouldn't it? Because if someone, if we're taking this at, you know, face value, that it is actually a ransom note and someone has kidnapped JonBenet, someone would have had to remove her from the situation while this person writes the ransom note. Unless we're going to say, what? They've kidnapped her, put it in the car, left it in the car outside and gone back inside to write the note.
Well,
That makes even less sense.
I don't think they go back inside, but maybe they immobilised her, sedated her, and then... I just think it's bizarre that you're going... You know, I could understand if that note was written beforehand and they brought it with them, but the fact that it was written on the new paper from the house proves it was written there.
Boulder police arrived at the Ramsey home shortly after the 911 call. Despite the ransom note suggesting a kidnapping, officers failed to treat the home as a secure crime scene. Friends and neighbours had been called over for support, and they moved freely throughout the house, potentially contaminating evidence. I mean, how many times do you hear about this in cases where people are just trodden through the scene, the police are not wearing any gloves, all different stuff? How is that happening?
I think it was more the fact that they invited like friends and family members over.
Which is fine if you need support, if your six-year-old daughter's been kidnapped.
Maybe she just wasn't thinking straight because, you know, are you really... This child's gone and the ransom note's there, so they don't know what's to come yet. So obviously you want people around you that, you know, are going to support you, as you say. So maybe they just didn't think about that. But the police really should have secured that much earlier than what they did.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Even if you have invited your friends over for a bit of moral support or whatever, surely the police are saying, sorry, this is a crime scene. Or we're treating it as one. You can't come in. We'll make an area for you over there or something. The fact that they were just allowed to wander through the house is another bizarre
thing. That's kind of like a murder scene 101, isn't it? You know, it's just something that doesn't happen. So the police started this case very badly, I think.
I feel like even if I turned up to a murder, I would know to secure the crime scene.
I think we'd know, wouldn't we?
Definitely.
We've got a lot of knowledge about this now.
For hours, there was no sign of JonBenet, and tensions in the house grew. Finally, at 1:05 p.m, Detective Linda Arndt asked John Ramsey and his friend Fleet White to search the house for anything unusual. They began their search in the basement. Can I just say here, is it not also a bit bizarre that the police are asking the family to search the house?
It is.
Everything about this so far, it just doesn't add up to me. Nothing adds
up. Yeah, I mean, you know, like if someone's left a ransom note and your child's gone, I still think I'd run all around the house looking in rooms just in case I could find anything before the police even got there. I'd do that myself before they got there.
Well, the first thing you're doing when you notice your daughter's potentially kidnapped or missing, you're going to run around the whole house, aren't you? Like you just said, you're going to search every room yourself first.
Yeah.
Of course you are.
To see if you could... Yeah, just in case they've left something or left
the child. For all they know, it could have been a sick joke and she might have been hiding somewhere. You know what I mean? It could have been anything, but I just find it so strange that the police are asking the father and his random friend to search the house.
And another weird thing is, why did they go straight down to the basement?
Yeah, why did they start in the basement? Maybe that was the only place that hadn't been searched by police or something. But also, isn't it true that when something like this happens, they have to treat the family, not as suspects as such, but they have to treat the family with some kind of caution. So to then let the father just wander around the house, he could be hiding any kind of evidence or anything for all they know.
Yeah, that's quite true. Well, no, they are treated actually as suspects. I mean, they are there at the crime scene. So why would they not be treated as suspects?
Well, exactly. So then, potentially, you're allowing the suspect to wander around the house and do whatever they need to do without you knowing.
Dispose of evidence, as you say, hide evidence.
Yeah. In a small, rarely used storage room just off the basement, John Ramsey made the horrific discovery. JonBenet was lying on the floor, wrapped in a white blanket. Her wrists were loosely bound with a cord, duct tape covered her mouth, and a garrote, made from one of Patsy's paintbrushes, was wrapped tightly around her neck. John carried her body upstairs sobbing and placed her on the floor in the living room. This act, though understandable from a grieving parent, further compromised the crime scene. The blanket, the tape, the garrote, all could have held critical forensic evidence. And that's basically what we were just saying, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I understand that though, don't you? He would want to pick his daughter up and take her upstairs and remove whatever was on her.
I guess that's just parental instinct, isn't it? You're not going to just leave your six-year-old daughter lying there. Clearly, you can see she's deceased. You're not going to leave her there, are you? You're going to pick her up.
A sad fact about that was, though, is that he actually laid her at the foot of the Christmas tree, which just makes it even more sad, doesn't it?
It's quite horrific, that, isn't it?
But even the police to allow that to happen, as you say, for the reasons we've just discussed, but the fact that he might actually find his child dead was wrong in itself, wasn't it?
And I guess, whose fault is it that that situation's happened? Is it the police's fault? Or is it his fault? In terms of, in my mind, he shouldn't ever have been allowed to go and search that basement anyway. It shouldn't have been left for him to make that discovery.
It was a crime scene, whether it was a kidnapping at that point or not. So that is the authority of the police to deem that a crime scene and treat it accordingly.
So the room she was found in was, as I've already explained, like a small storage room that they didn't really use for much. It was, when you went down into the basement, it was just off to the side. And apparently within the basement, they'd found a smashed window with a suitcase underneath it, which they believed was the potential entry point of an intruder, I guess, at this point.
Well, that's logical, isn't it, really? If someone's going to gain access to a house, you know, you would think it would be ground level or basement level, easier to get in through a window like that, isn't it?
But then again, say they've smashed this window. They're then risking, you know, potentially waking someone up or whatever. So they've smashed this window, they've got in through the basement, what, they've walked up into this house, which sounds by all means like a huge house, found JonBenet somewhere.
Exactly, because this house is so spread out as well. They would need to know where they were going, wouldn't they?
It sounds to me like whoever this was, they were quite familiar with the layout of the house. For it to be able to get round, know where her bedroom is, take her all the way back down to the basement, potentially stop on the way and write this 3-page novel, take her down to the basement, into this little storage room, and then walk back out to the basement window. I don't know, it just seems a bit far-fetched.
Whichever way this was done, you know, if they entered through the basement window, which it looks like they did.
Or exited through it.
Whichever way, they're going to have to wander around the house a fair bit, aren't they? Backwards and forwards. Get JonBenet, take her down the basement, go and find a pen and paper. You know, whichever way round this was done, they were going backwards and forwards without waking anybody up.
And, you know, that's going to take a considerable amount of time, isn't it? So, to me, already, it seems like it would have had to have been someone that wasn't raising an alarm within the house.
And another thing is, as well, JonBenet was garrotted with, it says, one of Patsy's paintbrushes on string or rope or whatever it was. What's the chances that you break in somewhere and
find the paintbrush?
And you go, you know where there's a paintbrush? Like, I'm assuming they were kept in the storage room. You know, if you're coming to do something, like, essentially it was a kidnapping, did it go wrong? Or were they always intending to kill this child?
Well, I think this is also a point now, isn't it? It's like, obviously this 3-page ransom note is, well, it's stating that at one point did they say in it that she's dead or that they've killed her. They clearly state that she's kidnapped and they want this exact amount of $118,000. But the whole time, she's dead in the basement.
Yeah.
So, again, it just, why do that? It doesn't make sense.
So did they write that ransom note with the intention of kidnapping her and taking her and something went wrong and then they killed her? Or did they kill her first knowing full well she was dead and just wanted the ransom money?
But why would you, even if they have killed her, Why would you leave her in the basement? Why would you not just take her with you? Either way. What is the purpose of her being left in that storage room?
How on earth would they have got her through a broken window, though, anyway? The thing is, I have seen that ransom note, and it is a very strange note in that it is quite melodramatic, really, and it says, if you do this and you do that, you know, JonBenet will be beheaded and all kinds of stuff like that in it. Seems like a really over-the-top kind of thing, but, you know, I mean, it did do the job because, you know, Patty did sound terrified on that 911 call.
I think the ransom note in this is always going to be the most bizarre piece of evidence. In the whole case, I mean, obviously we'll go deeper into it, but I think the ransom note is always going to be at the centre of this because it's either really important and plays a massive part in the actual crime, or it's actually just a red herring almost. Like it actually didn't mean anything. Someone just wrote it to throw everyone off.
Well, then that's a cover-up, really, isn't it?
A cover-up, yeah. To make it look like one thing.
What are you thinking so far?
My opinion on this case, I had an opinion, to be honest, before we even started recording this episode, and I've always thought that there was some level of family involvement. I just think there's too many things for me that don't add up for it to be a random act. And yeah, okay, they were a wealthy family. Maybe someone was targeting them, but who would have the knowledge to know that he's been bonused $118,000, like that precise amount?
Yeah, but if the family were involved, doesn't that seem ridiculous to write that in a note, knowing that someone would say exactly what you've just said?
Possibly, yeah. I mean, I guess there's pros and cons to all of it, but this is just my opinion.
I think we need to go a bit further into it to find out.
And again,
more.
Just going back to the ransom note, I think it probably, if there is family involvement, it was used to throw people off the scent. Just all the timings and stuff just don't sit right with me.
That ransom note, if it was written to three people off the scent, did exactly the opposite and pointed the finger of suspicion directly at the family, actually.
Yeah, and I think you mentioned it briefly earlier, but the fact that her dad, John, and his friend, Fleet, went immediately to the basement. I mean, it's a 15-room house, as we've explained multiple times. Why is that the first place you're going?
Well, I suppose in his mind, he probably may have thought, you know, it's a logical place for someone to come in, just like we've just said. But it does seem, and we don't know that he didn't search the house before the police got there, do we?
Yeah, possibly. Just at the moment, I'm kind of sat with the idea that there was some level of insider knowledge, some level of family involvement. That's what I think. What do you think?
It is very suspicious, but I would like to think that the parents weren't involved. Maybe it could have been some close family link that, you know, made this possible. I don't know.
JonBenet's autopsy report revealed chilling details about her final moments. She had suffered a severe blow to the head, fracturing her skull, but the official cause of death was asphyxiation due to strangulation. The garrote around her neck had been twisted tightly, suggesting a slow and deliberate act. The report also indicated signs of possible sexual assault, though this has been heavily debated over the years. Some experts argue the injuries could have been caused during the assault, while others suggest they were the result of a botched staging. Adding to the mystery, a piece of undigested pineapple was found in JonBenet's stomach. A bowl of pineapple with a spoon was discovered on the kitchen table. Patty and John both denied giving JonBenet any pineapple that night, but her brother Burke's fingerprints were found on the bowl. This single detail has fueled countless theories about what might have happened in the early hours of December 26th.
So that means that some people have a suspicion that Burke was involved, her brother.
Yeah, and from what I understand, just from little bits I've read online, they believe that that kind of points towards that he was the last one with her before she died, and there could have been a potential little sibling scrap or something, and he's pushed her and she's banged her head, and that's where the impact of her skull comes from.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that she had undigested pineapple means she'd only just eaten it. So therefore,
whoever's
fingerprints were on the bowl was the last person to be with her, or one of the last people.
Well, that's what people are saying, but I think in actual fact, it really means nothing. It really just means maybe she ate a piece of pineapple, and it really doesn't go any further than that. That's another option.
Well, I think it is a point to consider, isn't it? I mean, did she eat pineapple every night before she went to bed, or was that a means of getting out of bed and into the kitchen, or I don't know, this blow to the head sounds like, to me, it could have been an accidental thing, as you say. I remember when Jack pushed you over in the dog basket and you broke your on.
Yeah, I remember that as well.
So things like that do happen, don't they?
Well, I think also this is maybe where my feeling of family involvement comes in, because let's say he has pushed her over or something, she's banged her head, and unfortunately she's died accidentally. As parents, maybe John and Patsy have got involved and thought, shit, we need to cover this up. Maybe,
well,
they panicked
because,
a little bit.
Because they've lost a daughter then, and they could also lose the son, couldn't they?
Exactly.
But, you know, that's not uncommon, isn't it, for siblings to fight like that and push each other and things. And he was older than JonBenet, so he wouldn't maybe have known his own strength. And it could have just been a freak accident. The broken skull, you know, is a factor, isn't it, that you've got to consider?
Well, this whole thing's a theory to consider, isn't it?
But then, you know, okay, so they're trying to cover it up to protect Burke, but that is a bit extreme, isn't it, to take it down into the cellar and actually garrote your own child to make it look... I mean, why would you need to do that? Surely the blow to the head, anyone could have done that if they'd broken in as well.
Well, I honestly just think that stranger things have happened. Within days, the case exploded into a media circus. JonBenet's child pageant photos were plastered across TV screens and newspapers. These images, sparkly dresses, heavy makeup, big hair, triggered a wave of criticism and scrutiny toward Patsy Ramsey. Some claimed the pageant had sexualized JonBenet, making her a target for predators. Others accused the Ramseys outright of being complicit in her death. But here's the thing, the media frenzy didn't just focus on JonBenet. It painted the entire Ramsey family as suspect, creating a narrative that would follow them for the rest of their lives.
So this whole child pageant thing is like a really big factor, as I've said before, in this case. I mean, there's loads of kids who do this and, you know, don't get murdered. But it is, again, somebody on display for public viewing. And you'd be surprised what people can find out about your routine and everything.
Well, I think also some people just are completely against the idea of children being in pageants, full stop, aren't they? You know, caking them full of makeup, wearing these dresses that could be... Yeah, they could be classed as being over-sexualised, especially at 6 years old.
See, I think any sort of professional on the stage, within reason, obviously you've got to take into consideration the child's age and everything. You know, I've seen dance competitions that do a similar kind of thing. If Patsy was looking at it as just a hobby for JonBenet, a hobby she followed herself and got a lot of enjoyment out of, she probably saw no harm in it. I always say, you know, it's... Different people look at it differently, don't they? If you've not got that mindset, you look at those kids on the stage and just see kids dressed up on the stage, just having a good time. If you've got a weird mindset, you're going to see it as something different. Doesn't that fault lie in the eyes of the beholder?
Yeah, in the individual person. And I guess that is our two theories right there, straight away, isn't it? Is it an intruder that was kind of, I don't know, fixated on JonBenet because of this pageant thing, or... Is it family involvement? And I guess that's really the question that we need to find the answer to.
And they were quite a high-profile family, weren't they, as well? So they would have attracted a bit more attention, do you know what I mean? People may have been able to find out a bit more about them.
Well, I think also, on the ransom note again, they asked for that amount of money. That it's not hard to know that the family are well off. They're very wealthy. Her dad's a CEO. He owns a company. You know, she's successful. Even as a six-year-old, she's successful. So, from an outwards image, they do look like a successful, probably, you know, really well-off, wealthy family. So, that could attract some weirdos as well.
Some people were of the opinion as well that Patsy pushed JonBenet to do this. But from what I've seen and read, I think JonBenet was happy to do it. You know, she was quite enjoyed it. And outside of the pageants, she was just a normal six-year-old kid, you know, riding a bike and playing with things in the house, you know, toys and things. So... I don't think she was sort of driven to do that by her mother, although they probably both enjoyed it. It was probably a bond between them, wasn't it?
Okay, everyone, that's where we will end part one of this two-part Christmas special. In part two, we'll dive into the suspects, the controversies, and the theories that have kept this case alive in the public imagination for nearly three decades. Was this the work of an intruder? Or does the answer lie within the Ramsey home?
That's it for part one of our two-part Christmas special. We hope you enjoyed it.
Thanks for listening, and we hope to see you again for part two next week.
And remember, if you can't do the time,
don't do the crime.